Welcome to Bearmercast number 46. It is February 28th, 2011. Tonight we have got a roundup of my recent trip to Munich. I'm going to be talking about the F20, BMW headquarters, and just a bunch of stuff that, you know, I can't really talk about unless it's, of course, on the podcast. 1M production allocations. Continue to get a lot of questions around this. We're going to clear that up again and try to answer some questions that you guys have had. 1M GTS. What is this 1M that we see at Geneva? We're going to talk about that really briefly. M3 exhaust, M5, into the 50, N54. Finally, it seems like the engine that we've all loved for so long is going away. We'll talk about that a little bit. And then finally, the N55 BMW performance kit. So stay tuned. So we're back after a week and a half, 2 week break. Michael, how's it going?
Gabe, it's going well. And you?
Good, good. Actually, I've got some horrendous jet lag, of course. Just got back from Munich, and it is, I think it's about 4 in the morning on as far as the time I was on. So unfortunately, had some previous commitments, so I couldn't be over there for the actual show, but we have our friend from Kilometer Magazine, actually, Brian Jocelyn, over there, who's going to be taking some photos for us and helping us with a few interviews as well. So we're really excited for that. Of course, there's the connected drive concept and seemingly something from M coming up. Before we talk about my trip, let's just dive right into this 1M that's on the front page of Bimmerfile right now. It kind of looks like a 1M GTS. Am I wrong about that, Michael?
No, it looks pretty interesting. This is a car that's being used for MotoGP in Europe, and it's going to be, I guess, the safety car, pace car, whatever you want to call it for MotoGP, and it looks really aggressive. It's got some gills in the hood there, some fender vents.
Some louvers.
Louvers in the hood, and looks like a GTS wing, Gabe.
Yeah, there's a couple things here to note. It's got a GTS-style front splitter. It's got a GTS wing, which, yeah, you're right, it looks just like a GTS wing. And it's got a black grille, which, of course, you can get that anywhere. But then, black louvers in the hood. Now, what would require more cooling?
Well, it's either more cooling or more breathing. As we know, the V8 and the M3 moves a lot of air.
I actually don't think it could be the V8, because the amount of engineering that would have to go into that just to get that V8 in there would be pretty intense.
Or it could be added cooling, Gabe, for some bigger turbos.
That's what I'm thinking. I'm wondering, but, you know, it doesn't make any sense, though. You're talking about a car that's going to be, you know, about 2,500 worldwide, maybe about 800 in the U.S. Why in the world would you, a car that's already hard to get, create an ultra-limited edition of that same car?
I guess it's because they can.
I just wonder if that's what we're talking about here. I mean, we're conjecturing. This is complete conjecture. We may know more, actually, by the time you hear this. But as of now, we just have a couple photos and really no reference at all.
I think it looks pretty sweet, though.
It does. It absolutely does. It's listen, it's a 1M in white.
With racing stripes.
It's got some M stripes, and those aren't the M stripes that, of course, you know, will likely come. They're a little bold. But no, nonetheless, it does.
Those are the stripes I would love to see on, say, the ALMS to cars.
There you go. Absolutely.
Anyone's listening out there, give us some stripes.
So let's talk briefly about recent trip to Munich that I had, where I got to spend some time with a few different departments in BMW. We just actually wrote about the connected drive portion of it, and it's really interesting trying to dispel what connected drive is. We see that name or that phrase bandied about a lot by BMW, but you know, in reality, connected drive is kind of anything that connects the driver to the world outside them. So the very first connected drive technology was actually park distance control, which is, when you think about it, kind of logical. But of course, things have changed dramatically. And if you'd like to learn more about that, check out that article on Bimmerfile. It is a sort of a thorough recap of what connected drive really is. Other than that, I also had a chance to talk with the folks, the very, very folks who have created the iDrive interface. Now, we're not talking about designing the polished interface itself, but actually doing the research and sort of defining the menus, the categories, everything that you see within iDrive, and even down to shaping the controller. So it was really interesting to see how they do it. I actually got to go into the laboratory and see the way that they have cameras basically hooked up to somebody's glasses. So there's a camera that is focused right on your pupil, and then another camera that follows your eye, and it's called eye tracking, and it essentially figures out how long a task takes you. And there's a lot of different guidelines, if you will, around the world for usability within cars. But I can, needless to say, you don't want to have somebody's eyes off the road for more than, you know, a second or two. And these are some of the guidelines that BMW works within when creating the iDrive. So it's really, really interesting, from my perspective, having seen iDrive sort of, as we all have, you know, get better and better and see all this new technology come in the car, really see how these people are actually creating the interface that allows for all of it to come in the car safely.
Yeah, it's really neat. They use a lot of technology to, you know, track the vision and, you know, the haptics of the feel of the buttons and all that, and the ergonomics. It's really, really interesting. I'm actually a speech pathologist by trade. I've never actually said that on a podcast, but I do a lot with eye gaze as well, and technology, and for people that are not able to communicate with their voice, we can activate computers using eye gaze, using similar technology they use to keep clue in on to how much, you know, a person's eyes are moving during driving and all that. But you can actually activate computers and do all sorts of things now with eye gaze. It's pretty fascinating. And I had an earlier chance to talk with some of the engineers at BMW, and they're actually looking at ways to use eye gaze to activate things in the car too, which is, you know, a couple of years away.
But that's amazing.
That'll be really cool.
Well, and I think, you know, and it's kind of funny because in my day job, working for an ad agency, I also have seen some eye tracker studies, and it is incredible technology, and it's very, very cool to see BMW using all this. And one of the things that struck me in talking with these folks is just the enthusiasm and the passion they have for the topic. It's really, really incredible. For those keeping score at home, that the Center of Driving Simulation is headed up by Dr. Bernard Niedermeyer. He's the head of human interface at BMW. And again,
is that the FIZ?
It is actually at the FIZ. It's sort of on the outskirts of the FIZ. The FIZ, of course, is the massive BMW complex that houses most of BMW's, most of their corporate headquarters. It is pretty incredible. 10,000 people work at the FIZ.
Huh.
And moving along, I mean, I also had a chance to some demonstrations around active and passive safety, some new technology that's going to be happening that actually can detect something, an immovable object in front of you, and actually brake for you as you're about to hit it. It doesn't stop you from hitting it, but it slows you down to help mitigate the crash. So it's essentially auto braking, optimizing seats, belt tensioners, and can even deactivate the fuel pump a split second before the impact, closing it off and vastly reducing the chance of any fire. So
it's amazing.
Yeah. So that's some of the technology that we looked at. I got a firsthand passenger seat test drive of the auto braking, which is pretty cool. But it's really incredible. But you know, let's move on and talk about a couple other things that I saw while I was there, because this is where it's really fascinating. Got some time to look and be right next to an F-20, the next generation one series. Again, I had a chance last May, but now there's quite a bit more of them and there's less camouflage. So really got a feel for the car. And I did write about it on Bimmerfile. One thing that you'll notice when you see it is it's taller. It's a little bigger. It's wider and it's a little longer, noticeably taller. I did see it next to the current 5-door one series, but the shape of it looks a lot better. I think a lot of those folks who did not care for the headlights and the sort of sow sill, if you will, of the current one series, they have changed that, and it's a handsome car. It really is. Interior looks fantastic, so it's going to be, I think, a really welcome addition to the lineup. It's going to be debuting late this summer and going on sale in Europe late this fall. The 5-door and the 3-door, which I also saw, will not be coming to the U.S.
Boo.
Yeah, there you go.
That's my boo.
One thing, the fizz. Oh my god! So I basically had had a bit of a tour guide. There was a couple journalists and myself that were on this trip, and we literally went across the into the sort of the industrial complex of the fizz, and went through. We went down, I believe it was the second basement. I can't even tell you, like, the stuff I saw, boxes and boxes of new parts, or I should say parts for like new cars that they're sort of engineering and testing and designing right now. They just had crates of, you know, suspension components and brake calipers and all sorts of different things. And, you know, I really literally felt like I was in the heart of what, you know, makes a new BMW a BMW. Got to see some of the crash testing facility. One of the coolest things about that facility is that the engineers who work there have taken the steering wheel off of every car they've tested. So they have a representative steering wheel of every single BMW, Mini, and Rolls-Royce product on the wall. And it's pretty incredible. We weren't, of course, allowed to take any photos inside, but some of that kind of stuff that I saw really, I think, gives you an idea of the energy and the enthusiasm these people have, not only for their jobs, but for the brand. I mean, they love this stuff. You know, I imagine a lot of these folks, it's really, you know, it's a dream job.
Yeah, it's like being a kid in a candy store. I mean, seriously. Some of these people have jobs that, you know, I go to sleep and close my eyes at night and hope I wake up and stuff.
Well, it's just awesome. I mean, the walking through and seeing the chassis of the next generation one series sitting there was amazing. I mean, essentially saw it without body panels. You know, all sorts of different things were sort of sitting out. And again, I mean, I don't think I'm spilling anything because there's not much you can see. And you know, I mean, that's really about it. They were very, very good about covering quite a few things up. A lot of things had tarps. But just
those famous tarps, yeah,
lots of tarps. But you know, it was really, really fascinating to be led through this tour, and it's something I will never forget. It's just incredible. So moving on,
the F-20, just real quick, it's going to get bigger, obviously, in pretty much all dimensions. But I have a feeling it's going to be obviously more efficient because the mm-hmm. engines will be more efficient, and BMW has this amazing wind tunnel facility now where they test all these cars and they make the slightest tweaks to decrease the drag. And I have a feeling, you know, even if it's bigger, it's going to actually punch a smaller hole.
I wouldn't be surprised. You know, I think the F-20 may, if it does weigh more, I don't think it's going to be very much more. I think it's I mean, it's going to be a better car. Will it be a better performance or better enthusiast car? I think that really comes down to, you know, who, you know, what are we buying? Because BMW will create whatever we want.
As long as we speak with our wallets.
Right, right. I do think, I have a hunch that the next generation 1M or whatever it is called will be a slightly different kind of car. But that's still just a hunch. So it was a really great trip. Had a chance to go into the BMW Museum as well, which of course has just been renovated in the past year and a half, and they have a fantastic art car exhibit. In fact, all art cars are there with the exception of that, the hydrogen, race car that is currently in some sort of freezer somewhere because it's an ice sculpture now. Which by the way is a terrible idea, but
terrible.
It really is. But regardless, the art car exhibit is a must see, and I don't know how long it's going on at the museum, but it was incredible. We have tons of photos up on Vimmerfile of that exhibit and of the museum as a whole. But my God, if you have a chance to get to Munich this year before it disbands, go check it out. It's extraordinarily rare to see all the art cars in one place, unless you're talking about models. I mean, it's incredible.
They're fantastic. A few years back, we had them all in Grand Central Station in New York. So they were all on display there.
And yeah, that's right. That was one of the very few times I think they've ever been together.
It was really quite amazing. You know, just to see the progression of them and in each artist interpretation, it was pretty neat.
Yeah, definitely. So, Michael, I'm gonna hand the mic over to you because I know there's been a lot of question around 1M allocations. And I recently wrote a piece about my desire to sort of keep my hat in the ring for the 1M, even though I'm not going to get mine technically right now until God knows when. I mean, I think it's a September build date. And I still have plans to go to Munich to pick it up. But it's clearly ruffled a lot of feathers out there because there's people who, you know, have been waiting for the 1M. Myself, I've been waiting for it, literally, you know, name on a list for a couple years before it was even announced or even greenlit, and been sort of waiting for something like it for many, many years. And yet I'm having to wait another, 7 months? Then there's other people who sort of just decided they wanted it about 3 weeks ago and happened to, you know, have a really big BMW dealer near them and just plop down some money and they're going to get it in April or May. So a lot of people are upset about it.
And that's kind of understandable. And I knew this going back a few months that this was going to happen because this is what BMW does with their allocations. They reward dealers that sell cars. That's just the way it works, you know, unfortunately. And it's also about, you know, investing in and get their allocations a little sooner. Dealers that move more 1 Series and more M cars are getting more allocations. It's not a pretty system, I guess you could say, but we also got to consider that there are dealers in this country that sell about 50 cars total, and they're going to end up with 1. So, you know, they promised 1 to every dealer, and every dealer will have 1 car. And, you know, where it falls is all based on some formulas that the dealers in BMW North America have agreed upon. And then the other issue is BMW Germany, BMW AG is a, you know, mothership, as it were. Basically says, okay, you asked, you get your allocations here, you get your allocations here, you get your allocations here, you break them up, give them to your dealers however you feel fit. But we also have to remember that certain months that there's less production because there's vacations and things like that. So basically the way it looks is it looks like that the U.S. allocations came early and late. So you have them either April, May, or you have them September, October, November, it looks like, just from what I've seen people reporting, which, you know, for whatever it's worth, it sucks for people that have November dates. But at the same time, if your name was on the list, you put your money down, you're getting a car. It's coming.
Yeah, no, it's true.
So, you know, and the other thing is BMW's building these to sold units. Mm-hmm. So if the car is not marked sold, basically that allocation is going to be divvied to somebody that has a sold car.
So, but then theoretically, though, if I'm a dealer, I could kind of play the system a little bit and put my name down as the purchaser and just sort of throw it in the.
You absolutely can, Gabe.
And here's the thing. I mean, if you're a big dealer, you could do that and potentially pick up another allocation as well. And here's why you do it, because as a big dealer, there's a lot of dealers out there, and maybe not the best ones. You could probably charge another $5,000, $6,000, $7,000, maybe even more than that on top of the MSRP.
Yes, you could do that. You could absolutely do that. You could sell it to, say, your sales manager, put it out in a garage and let it sit for a while and wait for the demand to increase and then mark it up. Sure.
Interesting. Well, that's not cool. We'll just say that.
No, that's not cool. And that's a dealership I would never deal with.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I feel the same way. And as I mentioned in my article about the 1M, you know, I've got a dealer that I've dealt with for many, many years. They sell quite a bit. They're not a very small dealer, but they ended up with two allocations. And, you know, obviously I'm just glad to have one. I mean, there are several people who were on a list at that dealer who aren't getting a car, most likely. So as far as production, do we know an exact figure or a rough estimate? We've been talking about 2,500 for quite a while. Does that still hold true?
Yeah, from what I gather, that number is definitely the, I guess you could say, maximum they're going to produce. There is no specific number, but there's time constraints and all sorts of other issues with supply chain. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, they can only build so many of these things, and there's not enough time out of day to build, you know, all of them to meet everybody's wants.
Right, so. Right. So speaking of M products, let's move on to the M5, because I know that there was some talk about, you know, what, a year and a half ago we talked about, or a year ago we talked about, you know, is the M5 going to get a DCT or something even more interesting? And then, of course, there's a story by Motor Trend that sort of had the same thought or thought process, and they actually came out and said, we actually think it's going to be an automatic. Now, Michael, you're hearing something different.
Well, yeah, a year and a half ago, I had heard that at that time they were looking solely at automatic transmissions because the DCT just didn't make sense, and there really wasn't anything available to handle all that torque and to make it manageable in a sense of weight. So you could build it, it cost a fortune, it'd weigh a ton and throw the balance of the car out. So an automatic made more sense at that time, and they were working on automatics. And it looked, going forward, this looks like what we were going with. And from what we read a couple of weeks ago from Motor Trend was the same thing, was that no way it's going to be a DCT because of the actuators and the weight and all this other stuff. And then I hear from a BMW official, who shall remain nameless, that, you know, have faith in BMW to not offer it in an automatic. So I did my due diligence and I contacted some transmission manufacturers that BMW has agreements with. I mean, I'm not going to research Corvette transmissions or transmissions that BMW has no interest in or has ever even shown an interest in. So, I mean, that doesn't make any sense to me. So I contacted the manufacturers that BMW currently works with, has a great working relationship with, and co-develops products with. And what I got from them was that they're not allowed to disclose much, you know, about future products, but that Getrag and ZF now have transmissions that could handle the torque that this M5 is, you know,
is rumored.
Rumored. I'm going to say rumored because I've also heard from some M engineers that they could tune this thing however they feel fit. So it might not need all that torque because it's not a big, heavy truck like the SAVs were.
Right, right.
And it could have, say, higher rev and a little bit more horsepower.
Interesting.
So they could do a lot with the software, as we've seen BMW with the tuning of the other engines they have with the software. So they can do different things with the software in the car to maybe even accommodate a transmission. So what Getrag and ZF basically told me was they have it. You can't tell me if BMW is going to put it in the car. There may be some packaging issues depending on...
Well, and to be clear, when you say they have it, you're talking about a DCT.
A DCT, a dual clutch. Yeah, absolutely. Both are 7 speeds. Both can handle upwards of over 700 nanometers of torque. So that's, you know, roughly where we're looking. But the interesting thing I found out from ZF was that they actually, the 8 HP, the 8 speed automatic transmission, which is used, you know, in many cars right now in BMW's right. lineup and has been basically critically acclaimed, can be equipped without a torque converter with a wet clutch. Wow. So basically you can have a wet clutch setup, like, you know, racing transmission sort of, and the 8 HP automatic transmission actually shifting the gears. So it's almost the best of both worlds from packaging, weight, efficiency, and performance.
So my question would be, is it going to give you the same crisp shift?
Well, it'll lock up instantaneously, where the 8 HP they have dialed in, I think they do full lock between 500 and 1,000 RPMs now. So
you're talking about
the regular automatic with the torque converter is 500 to 1,000 RPM full lock. With the wet clutch, you could full lock instantaneously.
Wow.
So very similar to a DCT.
So now, I mean, at that point, you have to just think about feel, sound, and if performance is pretty much identical, weight.
Yes. Yes, and the automatic with the wet clutch would be significantly lighter than a DCT. That's not to say that that's what they're going with, okay? I don't have a definitive answer from any of my sources or any of the people I've contacted, but we do have these pieces that we can fit together, and with no uncertain terms, we were told it's not going to be just a slush box.
So,
and I've also heard that don't rule out a manual for the U.S. market.
Very, very interesting. I'm actually really interested in that automatic that and it sounds similar to something that Mercedes has done in the past, if I remember right.
I believe you're correct. Yes.
So that's the M5, and of course we're going to see that we've heard from several sources that we're going to see it in Shanghai as a concept, and then finally the production version will debut this summer on the internet, and then in person at Frankfurt in September.
And the concept will be really close to the production car. So
yeah, I'm sure it'll be like different paint and different wheels, I imagine.
I hope it's not matte. Let's just go with that.
While we're on the topic of M cars, let's talk about this new M3 exhaust. Michael, I understand you've had some firsthand experience with it.
I have. It's fantastic. I can't even put it into words, to be honest with you, because the only thing I can say is that you get a big smile on your face every time you go through it.
Like, and you own an
M3.
And
I own. I have 55,000 miles on an M3 currently. So I have driven manual. I have driven my fair share of miles in an M3, and I'm not sure how many people out there have a E90 M3 with that many miles. I'd gather probably maybe a couple people. But so, yeah, I'm very familiar with the exhaust, and I like the stock exhaust. It's not very aggressive, but at the same time, it gives you enough sound and doesn't have that highway drone, and it's quiet when you want it to be. It does the best it can for what it is, and it's a quality exhaust. And the biggest difference with the M Performance exhaust is that it sounds mean when you want it to be with no highway drone. And you can't even tell the difference actually on the highway. It's amazing to me. Because this thing is like aggressive, but not overly aggressive. Like some of those tuner exhausts you hear and you're just like, why does the car need to be that loud?
Right.
It doesn't. It's just obnoxious. This is actually really nice and throaty. It has a couple of really great sweet spots, and it's made out of a high-tech material, which actually drops 20 pounds off the weight of this thing.
Well, that's interesting. I mean, in itself is pretty impressive.
Yeah, it's quite impressive. The thickness of the material is about between 40 and 50% less than the stainless steel, with the same strength characteristics and warranty is covered, you know, same thing as BMW Performance. It's either the remainder of the factory warranty or the full if you have it done before the car's picked up. So I came away really impressed. And the pricing, it's a little expensive. I mean, it's over $4,000, but it's cheaper. But it's cheaper than, like, an Eisenman has one with the same material, and it's double the price, the Eisenman. So
you think about the pricing, it feels like sort of a, you know, one of those like high-end Apple products. You know, it's like when they first brought out the 30-inch screen years and years ago, it was unbelievable But at the same time, it was like the cheapest 30-inch screen anybody'd ever seen.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
It's still a premium product, but I think clearly BMW is trying to be aggressive within the premium stratosphere.
Yeah, and I absolutely loved it. There's no, you know, they're not advertising any performance gains. They're not saying, oh, you're going to get 8 pounds of torque or 30 pounds.
And that's interesting. I mean, because we all know that performance gains out of an exhaust are sort of black magic. I mean, I've seen figures that are ridiculous on a Mini. As far as like, you know, manufacturer claims. And then, you know, of course you've heard of like people going and dynoing it and it losing a, you know, 1 horsepower or something.
Right.
I don't know what the case is for this, but I think it's probably a smart move. They just say, listen, you're losing 20 pounds and you're gaining incredible sound.
Yes. And the sound is just great. I'm just smiling here because I'm just recalling going underneath the overpasses with the windows down. And I mean, it was 15 degrees out and it was fully worth it.
So the
also had the carbon fiber splitters, fantastic.
Oh, in the front, yeah.
Yeah, and the big giant rear wing.
I have to say the rear spoiler, the lip spoiler, the carbon lip spoiler. It's also of course on the 1 series and it's on the M3. That is a beautiful little spoiler.
It's fin, you know, the whoever's laying this stuff up is doing really hell of a job because it's flawless.
Oh, the carbon fiber.
Yeah, all the pieces I've seen are just absolutely flawless. Mm-hmm. The mirror caps, the splitters, the wing, everything looked fantastic. But the coolest thing is, Gabe, you know, I've gotten my car up on a rack before to look at it from underneath, and I really didn't spend all that much time under there. But you know, just checking out this exhaust while I was up on the lift and looking at the splitters and all the intricacies of the aerodynamics, it's amazing what they do to these M cars. And we don't even realize it. If you look at the underbelly of the car, how they put these flat panels on and they actually redirect air through the transmission tunnel to cool the transmission. And when you put these splitters on, you can actually see almost half tubes, I guess you could say, where they actually direct the air to the brakes.
Wow.
But you can't see it, you know, in regular light. You got to get it up on the lift and look at it from different angles because you can actually now see that there really are brake ducts, even though they're not really there. It's really cool how.
Well,
and
that's what we've heard in the past too, that they do duct air into there, so they're just not overt, but it still works.
Yeah, they're like half. I mean, it was kind of neat to see it, and I wish I had done it and spent more time under the car in the past, because it was kind of eye-opening how much they do to get this thing just the way they want it. Even just the cross members and the rear suspension, it's just amazing what they do.
And that's
why you can't build, for example, a 1M out of aftermarket tuning parts. You can't do it.
It's a different car.
It's completely different. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. And same thing with an M3. I mean, people talk about, you know, do I get a 335 IS or an M3? I mean, 335 IS, sorry, can't even say it, is a fantastic car, but an M3 is a different car.
Different, absolutely.
So speaking of different cars, the N54, which of course is, despite some issues that some people have had with high pressure fuel pumps, it has been a highly regarded engine, and it seems like, Michael, this is clearly it's on its way out. We know that, but it may be sooner than we think.
Yeah, I mean, it's really not left to much but the IS cars, the 1M and the 740i. That's really what we're dealing with here, Gabe. So you know, the 1M is an 11 model. It's not a 12. The IS cars, we don't know what they're going to do for the fall, but BMW Performance just released their N55 tuning kit. Now, if we go back into history, what happened when BMW Performance released their tuning kit for the N54 gate?
Yeah, not long after we saw the Z435 IS.
Followed by the 335 IS. So I'm expecting to see that there is no more N54 after the 1M.
Yeah, and I think it makes sense. I mean, you know, the BMW is going to replace the N54 with a less complex engine that gets similar power more efficiently. I mean, it you know, it's completely logical.
Yeah, I would see it as not necessarily less complex, the M55, because of the Valvetronic, which I can't wait to see Valvetronic tuned, because this is like my dream of having an engine without butterflies and all the turbulence caused by them, and just having, you know, the variable lift do everything. So I'm really intrigued to see what they can do with software to get that going, you know, response and all that great stuff. I'm really looking forward to that.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what the engineers come up with. And speaking of that, I mean, let's move right on to that N55 BMW performance kit. I mean, this is the follow-up to the N54 performance kit. And of course, we know the N54 and the original 1 Series and 3 Series got, what, 320 horsepower?
Yes. And this is going to be right around the same ballpark, 320, 330.
And do we know anything about pricing yet?
Pricing is going to be similar to the current kit, because realistically, it's pretty much the same idea, added cooling software.
Yeah, it's, you know, I think it's definitely a great value for somebody if they want to go out and retrofit it to their car. You know, with the 335 IS model being available from the factory, you know, this is a little bit more of a niche product, but it's a good product in that, I mean, BMW obviously has tested this thing thoroughly.
Yeah, and I think, you know, what it is if you have a 135i and you want to get a little bit more power out of it, go ahead. You know, it's almost 1M levels.
So, yeah, 320, and then, but not near as much torque, though, if I remember right.
It depends on if you have an automatic transmission or dual clutch or, you know, or manual. The manual always has a little bit less unless you get the IS models secondary to the flywheel situation.
That's what does it. Now, there are some other, and this is a different topic for another day, there are, of course, a lot of other tuning options out there, including Dynan and things like that. So I think it's going to be interesting to see this new BMW performance kit stack up against the old N54 kits. What I'm really curious about is what the aftermarket's going to do with this N55.
Yeah, there's very few, you know, I'd call them accredited tunes out there. Not to bash on anyone, but I'm not a big fan of just adding software to something to make it go faster. It's just not who I am. I believe in testing and adding cooling. Cooling is what saves your engine over time. You can never have enough cooling. So, I'm not sure. I don't think Dynan has one yet, and I would bet Turner doesn't. And if Turner continues to blow things up in Daytona, I'm not even going to mention them as a tuner.
Well, I wouldn't say that. I like those guys. So they, I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt. But no, at this time, it looks like Dynan does not have anything for the N55. And anybody who knows anything different, obviously let us know if we're wrong. But I certainly don't see anything other than just the Dynan exhaust. So yeah, it's going to be interesting. I mean, this is sort of the, you know, BMW's upped the ante a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely.
So with that said, we've got more coming. We of course are going to be recapping the Geneva show next week. That's going to be a pretty interesting show with the BMW Connected Drive. And then of course, we've got some kind of M product coming out tomorrow, supposedly, based on what the mpower.com site is saying.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of yawning.
I know. I'm not entirely sure what that
it's is, not, you know, for me, the only thing I'd salivate over, to be honest with you right now, at this point in my BMW fascination, is a Z4 with a V8 in it.
Well, I don't think that's going to happen.
We probably would have seen something being tested for that.
Yeah, so I think what this is going to be is the limited edition M3. I think that's what it's going to be.
So it's going to have, I don't know, an M-Power performance exhaust with GTS brakes.
Think about it this way. It's
matte black.
I don't know about that. I always look at it this way. If there are BMW performance parts, M will try to leverage that, obviously, for cost savings. So we know that the black wheels are BMW performance wheels, M wheels. Maybe it's going to have black wheels with some new color, perhaps a matte color. Maybe the GTS front splitter. Maybe a couple other things.
Is it going to be called the Vader edition?
They might as well.
And they could put the helmet on the seats.
They might as well. Well, there were Vader seats, so.
Oh, That's true.
The E36 Vader seats, which were fantastic seats.
So that's retro too. See, that works.
Yeah, I think it does.
There's well, I still think that we need to get people to rename the damn competition package, Gabe. That's my mission. I hate the competition.
You know, yeah, I mean, where were we last week? I mean, I like CS. I didn't think Porsche's used it that often. You know, just call it CS and call the fast one a CSL and be done with it.
Yeah. Could possibly happen.
That's my thought. Anyway, thus endeth another Bimmercast. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, definitely click over to bimmerfile.com and on the contact link and let us know. Any ideas for future shows or topics, let us know as well. Or if you just want to say hi, you know where you can do it. So until next time, this is Gabe. Cheers.
And Michael, pros.